Have you ever walked into a conversation in the middle of the conversation? Had you walked in at the beginning, it would have made sense. But because you walked in the middle of the conversation, it just kind of catches you off guard. Because it just doesn't make any sense. It might just be weird or strange, but because you walked in the middle and you're just catching parts of it, you have no clue what's going on. You guys ever have one of those experiences? I have them a lot for whatever reason. I'm really good at walking in the middle of a thought, in the middle of a conversation, and it just kind of throws you off for what's happening. Some of you, maybe that's not a common occurrence, so I have a video clip. This is one of my favorite commercials. They kind of give you this idea of what does it mean when I walk into the middle of something and kind of miss the whole conversation.
Hey, kids.
You got to get down. Come on.
America.
Sometimes if you walk into the middle of a conversation, you just have some assumptions that aren't correct. And getting the whole story is helpful. And I was kind of thinking about this week because we're in the middle of this series through this book called Habakkuk. And the same can be said of scripture as it can of any conversation. If you walk into the middle of it, it may not make much sense. Today we're in week 3 of this conversation, this dialogue between this guy named Habakkuk and God. And they're talking back and forth. And so if you don't know what they've said so far, it might be a bit confusing because Habakkuk has gone to God and he's complained, and then God responded. And then he complained again, and God responded it again. And today is the second part of God's second response. And so if you're just stepping into the conversation at this point, it's probably not going to make much sense. And I know we've had a lot of people traveling and we have some visitors. And so I want to make sure we understand where we are in this dialogue so that we don't think there's a cat about to, you know. So we're in Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 6 through 20 today. And it's a list of 5 woes. This is not a word we use very often. A woe is a warning. It's kind of a road sign that says, turn back now. And so God is presenting 5 warnings to the people. He's presenting 5 things, these declarations of saying, hey, if you don't change your ways, if you don't turn back now, I'm going to send punishment instead of the blessing I would prefer to send. And so if you just jump into the conversation here, if you're in the middle, if you just walk into this dialogue, you're going to be going, well, why is God so angry? Why does God seem to be really doling out punishments left and right? What did these people do? Who are these people? What's happening here? And so I want to make sure everyone's on the same page today of where we are in this conversation, who's talking, what's going on. And so we'll just kind of recap the story a bit. And I need to remember I'm on clicking duty today. So there we go. Turning back now, declaration. Let's recap the story a little bit. Like I said, there's this guy named Habakkuk, and he comes to God with a complaint. He's very upset, and so he takes this concern to God. He says, God, why are the wicked people, why are the unrighteous people, why are they winning? Why do they seem to be prospering, and yet the righteous, those who are trying to do right, they're really suffering and they're struggling. This just doesn't seem to be good. God, why does it seem like you're doing nothing to help your people, to help the godly people? And so God responded to him. God comes to Habakkuk and says, hey, I am doing something. I know it looks like I'm not. But you need to open your eyes. You need to look broader. You need to see what's happening on the world scene. I am always working if you can see it. And in this specific case, this is Habakkuk, look over there to the nation of Babylon, because I'm getting them ready to come and judge the wicked people. I'm getting them ready to come and be my punishment. And then Habakkuk comes back to God and goes, what? Now, if you understand the situation, Habakkuk is talking about the Israelites, God's chosen people, and God says, I'm going to use the Babylonians, this wicked and ruthless nation. They're going to be my punishment. And Habakkuk goes, no, that doesn't sound right, God. Why would you send a really bad nation to punish a okay nation, a not so bad nation? And so they have some more dialogue about this. And God says, well, you need to understand that they're going to get punished as well. Just because the Babylonians are going to come in and conquer doesn't mean they're going to get away with it either. Their day will come. And he kind of laid it out last week. He says, you need to live by faith. He says, live by faith. Trust in me that I know what I'm doing. And we talked about that can be really hard for us because God's ways are not always our ways. In fact, God's ways are almost never our ways, it would seem some days. But God says to Habakkuk, you simply need to trust me and I will take care of the situation. And so Habakkuk has come with his concerns, but he's come to the right person. We're saying this is, he's complaining to God, but he's complaining to the person who knows the answers and can help. He doesn't like the answers he's getting, but he's looking and he's listening. And he's trying to live a life of faith where he's trusting in God. And that's hard. And you see him struggling as he's dialoguing with God. You see him trying to walk with God and trying to trust God even when he doesn't like the answers. You see him trying to put trust over preference. He said, this is the way I'd like to see it happen, but I'm going to work on what does it look like to live a life of trust. God says, trust in me. Have faith in me. I will act. Justice will come. Yes, the Babylonians are going to come. They're going to sweep over the Israelites. They're going to sweep over the other nations. They're going to come and be my judgment. But their day will come. And what he said at the end of last week's part of the dialogue, he says, those who are being conquered will turn and taunt the Babylonians. Those who are being conquered will look at the Babylonians and laugh at them and mock them with these woes, these warnings. Even as the Babylonians are rising to power, people will look at them and say, warning and woe to you because your day is coming. You may be winning now, but God is going to act. And so that's where these five woes come in. They're taunts at the Babylonians saying, if you don't change your ways from being a conquering nation to being a wicked, violent nation, your day will come. So we're going to look at these five woes, these warnings, but what we need to think through today is just because they were written at a specific time to a specific nation, they also apply to us. These warnings are relevant to us today, even though they were written thousands of years ago. At the end of last week, God had kind of given us this little nugget of wisdom. He said, the righteous will live by faith. And it was this challenge, how do we all walk in faith? How do we all trust in God? And these warnings are really, they follow right after that statement, and they really apply to anybody who doesn't live by faith. He's writing the Babylonians, but he says, if you don't live by faith, here are some warnings for you. Here are some things you have to be aware of. And so we want to look at these warnings both from Habakkuk's perspective of what's going on in his day, but also question how they apply to us and maybe ask ourselves a few questions. These are not my notes. Give me one second. I grabbed the wrong notes. This is the right sermon. Don't forget. We're good so far. These are just the wrong notes. I had some write-ins. That's embarrassing. Hey, these are the notes I'm supposed to have with me. Now you're all questioning, what did the other notes say? Did he change the sermon? This is why I shouldn't be doing multiple things on a Sunday morning. Here we go. That's where it is. Okay, so we're jumping into these five woes, these five warnings, and we have to apply them to Habakkuk and ourselves. And what we see, they're kind of come pretty fast. He just kind of throws them out there. He doesn't dialogue much about them. And so we're going to jump from one to the next and kind of ask ourselves some questions along the way. So Habakkuk 2, we'll read 6 through 8 if you want to follow along in your Bible. But God says, will not all of them, will not all these nations who are being conquered taunt him with ridicule and scorn, saying, woe to him who piles up stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion. How long must this go on? Will not the creditors suddenly arise? Will they not wake up and make you tremble? Then you will become their prey. Because you have plundered many nations, the peoples who are left will plunder you. For you have shed human blood. You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. So he starts off with this first condemnation, this first warning. He says, look, well, let's talk about the stuff you're piling up. He says, you are piling up stuff, stolen stuff, by violent means. You are acquiring all of this stuff. As you conquer these other nations, you're taking all of their property, and you're getting wealthy off of their plunder through violence. He says, this has to stop. This is not right. But God does this interesting thing. He flips it around. He takes what we would assume and he kind of flips it upside down, because we would assume as the conquerors, as people coming in and conquering nations, we would assume they are the creditors. And this idea of a loan debt kind of situation, we would assume they're the creditors. They're collecting everything. They're calling in the debts. It's all our stuff. And God says, no, as the conquerors, you are the debtors. You are going more and more into debt the more you take from people. The stuff doesn't belong to you. it's on loan, and the debt will be called in, and you're being warned. God says to the Babylonians, warning to you, you're taking all of this stuff as you conquer the nation. You think it's all yours, but eventually it's going to be called in, and you're going to lose it all. Now, we can look at this statement and think, well, that doesn't apply to me. I've never gotten on a horse with a sword and gone to conquer a nation. I've never taken plunder in my life. But the underlying mentality here, the problem that they're dealing with is still alive today. It's this idea of when we gain profit from someone else's suffering. When I think, hey, I can make money or I can take stuff because other people are having to get rid of it because they're struggling or they're suffering. That when the bottom line is more important than the people it affects, we can find ourselves in a very similar situation to the Babylonians, where profit is the game. We're pulling things in. God says, no, your day is coming. You're going into debt. The real question that we have to ask ourselves as we think this through is, what is more important to us? Are the people in our lives the most important thing, or is the stuff that we acquire? Because when we seek out stuff or we seek out riches or prosperity at the expense of other people, we find ourselves in the same boat as the Babylonians. God says, if you think it's all about the stuff you're collecting, your debts will be called in. God tells the Babylonians and us, it's not your stuff. There's a lesson here on stewardship. When you think it's all yours, it's not. We have to ask ourselves, whose stuff is it? This is a question that we have to wrestle through. All of the things I have, who does it really belong to? Because we have to remember, biblically, God says, everything you have belongs to me. And I've given it to you as a gift. Well, it's on loan. It's all mine. And so what does that look like as we walk through life? Is it my stuff or is it God's stuff? How do we grow financially? Is it because I'm taking advantage of people or I'm trying to make the most money I can, or is it because God is blessing me? And sometimes they're very similar to each other. God blesses us with skills and talents to work and do good at our jobs. But is the bottom line the goal, or is it recognizing it's God's stuff? How am I open-handed with God's stuff? I say, you know, everything I have is a blessing from God, and so I can be open-handed and share and bless others? Or am I closed-fisted saying, no, this is mine and I'm not going to give it away? God looks at the Babylonians and says, you're taking all this stuff, and you think it's yours, but it's really not. And the tighter you hold it, the sooner it'll be taken away from you. And he says the same thing to us. Woe to you if you think it's all your stuff, if you're closed-fisted, if you're greedy, if you take advantage of other people for your own gain, because one day you will be called to account. And then he jumps to the next one. Again, this is rapid fire. So he says that, he lays it out, and he keeps going. Habakkuk 9, verses 11, 9 through, or 2, 9 through 11. He says, woe to him who builds his house by unjust gain, settling his nest on high to escape the clutches of ruin. You have plotted the ruin of many peoples, shaming your own house and forfeiting your life. The stones of the wall will cry out, and the beams of the woodwork will echo it. I love this poetic stuff. I'm not a poet. And so you have to kind of say, what is God actually saying here? In the first warning, God says, hey, don't take stuff that's not yours by violent means. Here he kind of turns the focus saying, don't violently protect what's not yours. And he paints this picture. He says, you're building this house, or you're building a nest up on high. You're building an encampment out of the reach, out of danger. The Babylonians are not just taking the stuff, but they're also building these mighty fortresses to protect it. They are assuming that their own strength and their own power and their own might was enough. They're saying, look, we have so much power, we have so much gift, and we are such a mighty people, we don't need God. We are better than God. They're saying the exact opposite of what God had told us at the beginning of the chapter. He says, the righteous, the godly, will live by faith. And they say, oh, we don't need God. We have all the strength. We have all the power. We can protect all of our stuff as we acquire it. And God says, no, you don't understand. Those that you've killed, those you've taken advantage of to build this fortress, to build this protection, they're going to call out against you. Their blood will call out. There will be a reckoning. When you put your faith in other things rather than God, if you say, my faith is the things that I've built, the protection I can build up, instead of God, God says, it's going to fall. This is the warning he gives to the Babylonians. He says, how does that work for us? Well, the question we have to ask, what do I put my faith in? What do I think will protect me? When I look into my future and my retirement and where I'm going, what do I think is going to be my rock and my protection? Do we put our faith in our 401ks? Like, okay, as long as I have a good retirement plan, my future is secure. Do we put our faith in our skill set or our job? Like, I have this great job, I can't fail because I'm so talented. As long as I keep working hard, I'm good to go. Do we put our faith in this image we present to people? As long as people like me and I'm gifted and I'm talented and I can kind of present this good person, then I'm good to go. And God says, if you're building up your own protection, if you think it's all about what you can do to protect you, rather than walking in faith, it's going to fall. So what do you think will protect you? Now, I want to share this morning. Is I wrote this week, and I prepared the sermon, and then I think it was Thursday night, I was working on my personal finances, and I fell into this trap. We had some unexpected bills come in. I was looking at how things are working, and I started thinking about, okay, retirement plans and just some of our savings, and I found myself getting really anxious. Not that we can't pay our bills, not that we don't have money in savings, like we're fine, but I found myself getting anxious as I thought and was projecting, okay, if I keep saving so much each month, here's what we're gonna do for college down the road. And I got so anxious inside, and I went, wait a minute, didn't I just write this sermon? Didn't I just talk about what do we think will protect us? And I had this moment of going, I'm getting worried about my protection from my financial end rather than trusting in God. And it was interesting how God will speak even to myself as I'm working through his word. Now, I want to be clear, there's nothing wrong with having a retirement plan, a 401k or a pension or something like that. There's nothing wrong with having a good job or a nice car or a house. These things can simply be blessings from God. But where is our focus? If we're so focused on those things and about providing for ourselves through these things, then we begin to lose sight of who God is and walking in faith. And God says to the Babylonians, hey, you're putting your faith in what you're building, in how you're protecting yourself, and it's going to fall if you do that. Are you walking in faith in God and trusting him to protect you? And then he jumps to the third woe. Again, he just jumps right from one to the next, and if you don't pause, you almost miss what he's saying. Habakkuk 12 through 14, 2, 12 through 14. He continues with this third warning. He says, woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by injustice. Has not the Lord Almighty determined that the people's labor is only fuel for the fire, that the nations exhaust themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. God starts his list of warnings by talking about an individual. He says, woe to the person who violently and with injustice grows and consumes. And then he moves to protecting the wealth and building a house or a fortress by violence and injustice. And now he moves to an even larger concept, to a city. He says, woe to you who build a city from injustice. And if you look at the progression here, it just gets bigger. He goes from a person to a house to a city. We can kind of see that progression. We realize when we make our life about violence and injustice, when we accept those as just normal things that are there to help us get ahead, they simply grow and consume us. And God seems to be addressing Habakkuk's initial concern. When this guy Habakkuk came to God, he says, why is there violence? Why is this allowed? And God says, yeah, when it's allowed, when violence runs rampant, it grows and it consumes. When it's left unchecked, it rules the day. And God says, let's talk about that and let's address each step. When it starts as a person and moves to this house, this fortress, and moves to a city, let's address and understand that there is judgment coming, there is justice coming, and if you live this way, you will fall. He says, people's labor, all of their workings, all of their striving for this stuff, it's simply fuel for the fire. It's not lasting. It's meaningless. It's not going to be there at the end of the day. He says, in the end, all that matters is that the righteous live by faith. That's how he started this whole section. What does it look like to live a life of faith? Because that's all that matters in the end. He says, all of this leads to nothing. Instead, the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the water covers the sea. At the end of the day, he says, all that matters is all this violent scheming, all this trying to get ahead, all this conquering, all of it will pass away. All of it's meaningless. The glory of the Lord will fill the earth. The knowledge of who God is will cover the earth like the waters. This word, the knowledge of the glory of the Lord, knowledge is the same word that God uses in Genesis when he says Adam knew his wife Eve. It's this intimate personal relationship. to know one another deeply. In the end, God says, my glory, my majesty will cover the earth. And to know me is all that truly matters. He's reiterating here, a life lived by faith, a life lived by knowing who God is the end goal. It's not about getting ahead. It's not about having stuff. It's not about winning the day. It's about walking in faith. And so you have to ask yourself the question, do you know God? God says at the end of the day, it's about knowing me. It's about knowing my glory, about knowing my majesty, knowing who I am intimately and personally. And that's what's important. And woe to you if you think that's not important. It's a warning to you if you think you can live your life by yourself any way you want. Because God says, in the end, I'm all that matters. And then he continues with the fourth one. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbors, pouring it from the wineskin till they are drunk, so that they can gaze on their naked bodies. You will be filled with shame instead of glory. Now it is your turn. Drink and let your nakedness be exposed. The cup from the Lord's right hand is coming to you, and disgrace will cover your glory. So you got to go, what's going on here? Because talking about drinking, getting drunk, taking off your clothes, it's just kind of confusing until you look at the context. The Babylonians not only would come in and take over a country, conquer the land, but they loved to kind of put the conquerees, is that a word, to shame. And so they would bring in the captives and they would make them drink and drink and drink until they got drunk. And you know what happens when you get drunk, you oftentimes do silly things. And so the Babylonians would make them strip down, they would make them parade around and make this great show of the people. They would shame their captives to show off how great they were. Essentially, they would say, look what we can make you do. We have conquered you. We can make you look like fools. Look how great we are as we shame and embarrass you. In their mind, as they were conquering the world, they were filling the earth with Babylonian glory. Look how great the Babylonians are. Look how wonderful we are as a people. Look at what we can do and how we can make these people do anything we want. But God has just said that he will fill the earth with his glory. Because at the end of the day, my glory will fill the earth. My praise will fill the earth. And so what you think is your glory, Babylon, what you think makes you look better, it's going to turn around to shame. All these things you do to make yourself look great, it will be your shame. He says, now it's your turn. The cup from the Lord's hand is coming around to you. You've humiliated your neighbors. You've tried to take advantage of them. You've tried to make yourself look good, but it will all become your shame. And so you think, okay, how's that apply to me? Because I don't make people get drunk and try to shame them. But we do have to think a little more clearly of whose glory are we seeking? What are we trying to do in our lives? Who are we trying to build up? Are we trying to make sure that God is the focal point of everything we do, that God is the one receiving the glory and the praise, or is it about making myself look good? God says, when you focus on yourself and it's just about making yourself look good and you ignore me, it's going to get flipped around. Your glory will turn to shame in view of who I am. Now, to be clear, this right here is what Habakkuk has been waiting to hear from the very beginning. God says, the cup is coming. It's now your turn. The wicked are about to be punished. And Habakkuk's going, great, this right here is what I wanted God to say at the very beginning. Habakkuk went to God and said, hey, God, why are you allowing all this violence? Why are you allowing these wicked people to rule the day? And God just said, okay, the wicked are going to get punished. But he didn't just say that at the beginning. He kind of took a detour from Habakkuk's perspective. If God had simply said this at the very beginning, the conversation would have been very short. If God had said, okay, the Israelites, the wicked are going to be punished, all right, we're good, Habakkuk would have gone home happy. But instead, God says, okay, the Israelites need punished, so I'm going to raise up the Babylonians, and then the Babylonians will be punished. Their turn will come. There's a progression here. And from Habakkuk's eyes, this is a detour. But from God's eyes, he's addressing everyone. He's dealing with all of the wickedness and all of the injustice. It just takes time. At the end of the day, all wickedness will be punished, justice will come, and God's glory will reign. But the timing is God's timing. It's not our timing. God processes things differently than we might, but he's more encompassing. If Habakkuk had had his way, the Israelites would have been punished, or the wicked in Israel would have been punished, and that would have been the end of the story. And God says, no, you need to look and see there's more to the world than just your people. Let me encompass the whole world with my justice. He promises that justice is coming, that it will come, and his glory will fill the earth. And isn't that what we all want? Don't we want God to be on his throne? Don't we want to see people worshiping God and praising God and saying, it's not about me, it's about honoring God? We would prefer this to come sooner rather than later. We know that we live in a world that is still full of violence, is still full of injustice. You turn on the news, we see it every night, and we ask these same questions. God, why are you allowing this? What are you doing? And God calls us to open our eyes and to see that he's working. It's not always in the way we would want. He says, open your ears and hear my voice. Hear me speak peace into your life and know that I am in control. And walk in faith. Walk in faith knowing that I am in God and I'm going to take care of this. I will bring justice. It just sometimes looks different than what you expect. And then from there, God turns to his fifth and final warning. He turns from addressing the violence, and he actually talks about one of the causes of the violence. Habakkuk 2, 18 through 20. He says, of what value is an idol carved by a craftsman, or an idol that teaches lies? For the one who makes it trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There is no breath in it. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. Now, as you're going through this conversation and this dialogue, this last statement kind of seems like a sudden shift. God has been addressing the violence. He's saying, hey, warning to you, woe to you who's living out this violent life. Your time is coming. And then all of a sudden, he's talking about idols. He's talking about worshiping handmade things. And you go, how does that fit? What is God doing? God has been challenging the people to live a life of faith. He's pushing us to say, if you want to live a life for God, then live a life of faith. And all of these warnings are the opposite of faith. He's all of these violent and just things, this is the opposite of what it means to live a life for me. He said, when you live a life for yourself, when you seek your own pleasures, when you put your own desires above other suffering, this is the problem. And here he kind of summarizes the problem. He says, you can live a life of faith. You can live a life seeking after God. Or you can live a life of faith in something you've made. When we make our own gods, now for the Babylonians, that was something made of wood or stone, something they crafted. For us, we don't do that as often. We tend to make our own gods out of money, out of popularity, out of our skill set. We worship ourselves. We make our own gods, just different. Because when you make your own gods, you get to decide what's best. The Babylonians would craft their gods out of wood and stone, and they would declare, this is what my God likes. This is what pleases my God. Shocking. It was exactly what the Babylonians liked to do. Because they would create their gods, they could decide what the gods liked. And since they liked to conquer people and be violent and unjust, their gods endorsed that. Surprising? Not really. God says, when you make your gods, the evils of your heart, the evil desires, the struggles you have come out and they're okay because your handmade God endorses them. The root of the problem, as God's describing here, is who is your God or who do you worship? He says an idol, something that you make, it can't give you guidance. It can't lead your life. He says an idol is silent, but you can make it speak. You can make it lead your life, but it's really just you telling it what you want to hear. He says, an idol is silent. And so when you declare, this is my God, this is the thing I'll worship, you're essentially giving yourself permission to get ahead in life by any means necessary. So, for example, in modern terms, if money, prosperity, if this is what you worship, if this is what's most important, if this is your God, then the bottom line on the spreadsheet is all that matters. And anything to get you there is permissible. If getting to the top in life is your God, if that's the thing you seek after most, then stepping on people is okay. God says, when you craft what's important in your own life, rather than looking and walking in faith, that's why things get violent. That's why things are unjust. But the righteous, the godly, will live by faith. Not in yourself, but in an all-powerful, holy God. God says, all that matters is worshiping me and following me, and I will help you lead your life in an honoring way that brings you to a good end. There may be troubled days, but I'll be with you and I'll help you get through it. God brings this reminder again to live in faith, to trust in him to take care of us. And then he ends this whole dialogue with this statement of, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. And he's interestingly here, he's kind of playing off of something he just said. He says, idols cannot speak. Idols are silent. I, however, he says, I am God and I do speak. And the proper response in my presence after I have spoken is silence. He says, you go to these idols and they are silent to you. You come to me as the true God and you should be silent in my presence. When we truly hear God's voice, when we hear him speak, when we experience his glory and we meet with him, we find ourselves with a total inadequacy of words. When we are in God's presence and God is speaking to us, at the end of their conversation, that time together, we have no words. Not that it's wrong to speak to God. God says, come into my presence and be silent. He's not saying, don't talk to me. We've established that over the last several weeks. There is a conversation, a dialogue going on here. God wants us to speak to him. We've been seeing and watching Habakkuk pouring out some very strong emotions, being very abrasive with God at times as he's expressing himself. And God's been okay with that. God has never scolded him for coming and speaking. He says, but now we've had a dialogue. Now I've responded to you. Now I've helped you understand my word is a done deal. The situation has been addressed. And now is the time for silence and reverence. Now that I've spoken, stand in my presence in awe and reverence. Solomon would remind us of the same thing in Ecclesiastes 3, verse 7. He writes this little verse. He says, there's a time to be silent and there's a time to speak. God is looking at Habakkuk and saying, okay, we've been dialoguing. You've been speaking. Things are good. We're kind of explaining what things are doing. And now the time for silence has come. Jesus would put it this way in the Gospel of Matthew. He says, hey, when you pray, don't keep babbling on like the pagans, for they think they will be heard because of their many words. He says, when you're praying and you're talking to God, great. But if you just keep going on and on and on and on and on, you've missed something. He says, these other people, they pray and they think the more they talk, the more God listens. God hears you. And there's a time just to be silent before God. Now, we're good at talking to God most days. And we've been talking over the last several weeks about just coming to God and sharing our emotions and being honest with him. And most of us, I think, are pretty good at talking to God about and spending time in prayer. Most of us are really good at singing and worshiping as we come together on a Sunday morning. Okay, I'm going to sing some worship songs and just give God praise. And we're pretty good at that most days. And some of us are even okay at listening to God as he speaks. Right? Habakkuk speaks to God and then he lets God speak back. And so some of us struggle with that a little bit. I know I do it some days just to be let God speak and to listen. But we're working on that. But most of us, I think, struggle to be silent before God. That's a huge challenge for me because I like to talk. I like to make noise. And God says, let's be silent after he speaks. God is calling us to respond in this silence, in reverence of all, of who he is, of what he said, of what he's promised, and what he's doing in our lives today. And so we're going to do that today. I want to be very practical as we read through this dialogue, as we see this the example that Habakkuk sets for us of how to talk to God. I want to be very practical in doing what God says. And so I want to close our time together today. I'll pray in a moment, and then we're just going to close in silence. And I know this is going to be awkward, because many of us don't do silence well. I don't. Right? 30 seconds of silence, and I'm done. But God says, come into my presence and just be silent for a while. And I want to be faithful to what God says and to his glory in our lives. And so I know this is uncomfortable for many of us, but we just want to practice what God says. And so in a moment, I just want to close our sermon, our time together in prayer, and then we're going to be silent and just sit in his presence. But let's be clear that silence in God's presence comes after the conversation. It comes after the dialogue. And we saw Habakkuk speaks, God responds, Habakkuk speaks again, God responds, and then he's silent. And so if you're here this morning and you haven't spoken to God recently, or if you're here this morning and there's just something on your heart that you need to talk to God about, now is not the time for you to be silent. Now is the time for you to speak to God. And so if that's you this morning, I would invite you, you can come forward to the kneeling altar and just spend some time talking to God. Our prayer team will be available in the corner if you want to pray with someone. You can stay in your seat and simply talk to God in prayer. But if you have something on your chest that you need to share with God, some emotional thing you're going through, or just need to talk to God about something, this is the time to do that. Because God says, speak to me and then be silent. But if you're here this morning, you've been talking to God and you've been having dialogues and you're listening, now is the time then to be silent. If you've been talking to God and you're going through this process, okay, God and I are in a good place right now, then God says, okay, now it's time for you just to spend some time in silence. And so I'm going to pray, and then we're going to be silent together. And you might be here for 2 minutes, and you might be here for 20. It's up to you. It's whatever you need just to be in God's presence. And then when you're ready, I would invite you just to simply stand and head out to the lobby. You're welcome to fellowship out there and spend time talking as we always do after service, but we're going to spend time in here in silence. So I welcome you to chat and connect with each other out there, but we're going to be silenced together in here because God calls us just to spend time in his presence. As a practical note, if your kids are downstairs in children's worship, they're going to be in the lobby today rather than coming in because they're not so good at being silent either. But I just want to spend time as a congregation today coming before God's throne saying, God, we are speaking to you, we are listening to you, and we understand that there is a time just to spend in your presence and to be silent together. So I'm going to pray and then I'll invite you to be silent for as long as you'd like today. God, as we read your word, as we see this dialogue, this example that Habakkuk sets for us as he talks to you, we're really good at talking. I'm really good at talking some days and I'm not so good at listening and I'm really not good at silence. And yet your word tells us that there is a time for us to simply sit in your presence in awe of who you are, in all of your glory. So God, I pray this morning that we would just do that for you, whether for a moment or for an hour, whatever you call us to do. God, if there is someone here this morning who is struggling, who's just really having a hard time with something in life, with a sick family member, or just something they need to get off their chest, God, help them to know that this is the time for them to speak, to come before you in reverence and awe and just share their emotions, as blunt and as abrasive as they might be, that you welcome them to speak and then to listen to your voice. But God, for those of us who have been talking to you, who feel we're at a good place in our relationship with you, I pray that you would just help us to be silent and just sit in your presence. God, I know this will be awkward for some of us. We're not good with this kind of stuff. But just help us to experience you just for a few moments this morning. And then go on our way knowing that you are God and the earth is full of your glory. Amen.